if you don't have financial security, you are seeking it then, right? And sometimes you find it in a significant other. And the crazy part about that is that you lose yourself. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen with girlfriends. Like, you lose yourself. You lose a part of your identity because you now have to conform to the preferences of that person because you're exchanging that for the security. And that's not a good or bad thing. It's not a judgy, like, whatever. Like, if that's part of your MO and you're totally okay with that, then that's wonderful for you. But if you feel like you're compromising because of that, if you feel like you're literally changing who you are to adapt and conform to the preferences of this other person simply because you need financial security, like, that is not a good enough reason. Not in this day and age, not in the fact that we live in the United States of America, where as a woman, you can go open a business, you can own property, you can go get a job, right? There are other places in the world that that's not possible for young women.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach. Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, we can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Lisa Song Sutton. Lisa, what's up? How are you?
Hi, how are you?
So quick.
Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you. I want to quickly introduce you, and then we'll get into the real meaty good stuff. But guys, if you don't know Lisa Song Sutton, she's a serial entrepreneur. She's a real estate investor, former Miss Nevada. Fun fact, you were actually the first Asian to ever win the competition. Very
right.
Cool. In a podcast, I heard you're a recovering lawyer. We can talk about that if you'd like. Co-founder of Ship Las Vegas, Sin City Cupcakes, Real Witch, Real Rich Women, I can't say the double R's today, Lisa.
The alliteration's getting you.
Real Rich Women, that's real estate. You can find you guys on Instagram, some other businesses that I'm sure I'm missing. Another fun fact, former congressional candidate for Nevada's 4th District. And I see you hanging online with like legends like Robert Kiyosaki and all the cool cats and kittens. So yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you're just like a master of relationship building and et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm excited to learn more. So Lisa, is there anything that I missed? Because I know I missed one or two things, I imagine.
I mean, you covered most of them. Just, you know, I'm a diversified entrepreneur, real estate investor. So I own a real estate brokerage here in Las Vegas called Engel & Vokers. And then I'm also a general partner in a venture capital fund called the Veteran Fund. And we invest in companies in the tech and national security spaces who have veterans or military spouses in their C-suite leadership.
Love this. Where does the drive come from? Because you are literally the quintessential entrepreneur. Like, you just love building things. It's incredible.
I love it. You know, I didn't start with like a stereotypical entrepreneurial path of, you know, I was flipping goods in high school or something. I was really excited to go to law school. And so that's exactly what I did and started my career in law, in business litigation and business bankruptcy. And when I started my first company, which is just as a side hustle, still working my full-time job at the firm, and I like my job, but we started Sin City Cupcakes now 10 years ago, and that was just a fun side hustle. But as it grew, I realized, wow, I can have my own company as long as I team up with an operations partner and put together processes in place and help build it out. And so I just kind of took that same model and replicated that in different industries. And now here we are 12 years later.
It's amazing to see like 12 years later, like, again, hanging out with people like Kiyosaki, winning Miss Nevada. Everyone sees like the trophies on the wall.
Yes. Yep.
It wasn't always easy, was it? And you can tell any story you'd like, but have you had any nosebleeds? Like, people see what you've accomplished and who you are, and they're like, I could never do that. Like, it wasn't always easy, was it?
No, of course. And I think whether it's interviews or bios or social media, you share the highlights. And when you're trying to discover something about someone, you're looking at their achievements, right? You're looking at what they've done or what they've built or what they're doing. No one's putting out their failure resume, right? Yet mine's quite long. I had a shoe venture that folded. I had bioluminescent plants. That company went, you know, we folded that in a year. There have been many ventures that either I've co-founded or invested into that didn't work out. I've had real estate ventures not work out. The key is that you have to keep trying, one. And two, just realize, like, even all these people that we tend to put on pedestals, like a Robert Kiyosaki, who's amazing, by the way, you know, like a Robert or a Ken McElroy, these people who have achieved so much. And again, you're looking at what they've achieved. So they've got this long highlight reel, right? One, they've been in the game for a long time, right? They've decades of life experience and work experience and business experience and real estate investing on the rest of us, one. And two, we tend to, I think, put people who have achieved so much onto a pedestal. And the reality is that, like, they started with that first house. They started with the first company. They just got started. And so if you keep consistent with that path, I think that's the best way to keep a mindset about it. But of course, there's been so many failures and hardships and things that didn't work out for me. And I didn't let that stop me or define me.
It doesn't stop you. It doesn't always work out, but it doesn't have to define you. Let's talk about your big first. So not first failure, first idea. So you go and you think that you're going to be a lawyer, like that's career, that's what you go, you study. When did you pivot and what was like your first win? Like whether it's first business or first fantastic idea that led to that business, what was your first sale of a house in essence? But what was that first move?
So the first big win, like I said, was just realizing, wow, I can build a company, like something I own, and that we have this autonomous control over, right? We have creative control over it. We could take it in any direction that we want. And I realized that in that first venture of building Sin City Cupcakes. But, you know, for example, with the real estate, like the first win within the real estate was realizing I have this network from my legal career that I can call upon to let them know that I'm getting into the real estate game and that I'm really serious about it and that I've served as their trusted resource in this realm. I want to serve as their trusted resource in this realm now, in this other realm. So just because you start with one thing, whether it's law, whether it's whatever, name whatever you got your degree in, just because you start in that doesn't mean that you have to stay in it for the next 40 years of your life. And it also doesn't mean that any of the prep leading up to it or your time in it was a waste of time, because you are able to leverage the resources and the knowledge and the sphere that you build in that in your next venture.
Anybody listening, I recommend hit that like 30-second back button, because that's gold. Like, you can leverage those resources. You get to learn from them. And I want to talk about real estate in a moment. This is one of those conversations where I don't know where to take it because we could talk about six different things. But it's kind of like asking like a one-hit one. You're not a one-hit wonder. Bad example. But it's like asking a band to play the same song that they've been playing for 12 years. But I have to bring it up because people might not know what Sin City Cupcakes is. And yeah. You hear the word cupcake and it already like brings joy into my life. So tell us about launching Sin City Cupcakes and kind of like the sexy fun that you bring to the market with that.
Yeah. So Sin City Cupcakes are alcohol infused cupcakes and it's perfect for Vegas, right? So it just made sense to do it here. And it's just such a fun business. This is a fun celebratory novelty item. And so when people are coming to Vegas, they're in general coming to celebrate. They're coming to overspend. They're coming to overindulge. They're coming to have a good time. And I love that we get to be part of that.
It's huge. So alcohol in the cupcakes. What yes. are some of these combos? I'm going to try to bake them at home. I'm probably going to mess it up, but what are some of the combos so I can start to kind of taste it and smell it in my head here?
Yeah. So some of our best sellers, the chocolate wasted, it's a signature chocolate cake. And the filling inside is a chocolate vodka, almost like a pudding that's inside the middle of the cake. Think like lava cake-ish, but it's not hot. The Better Than Sex is a white champagne cake, and the filling inside is a champagne vodka raspberry. We top that off with a white chocolate ganache and cream cheese frosting. We've got wine, peanut butter, whiskey. I mean, name your spirit of choice, and we can turn that into a cupcake. And we've had a lot of fun also teaming up with brands when they launch. We did a couple of years ago a Halloween collaboration with Patron for their. It was like Cafe Diablo something. It was like orange and like an orange and black label. And they did it as like a special seasonal Cafe Patron. And so we got to do that for Halloween.
Tasty. Cafe Patron. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. is this something that you can get? Is this a Vegas exclusive or can I get it anywhere?
So our headquarters are Vegas. And then we have small kitchens in Dallas and Nashville for like catering stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's just such a fun business. We do have a shippable product that goes out as well. But I'm excited actually for 2023 because we're going to be recalibrating, some of our offerings and really strategizing. And that's the thing, right? It's 10 years old and yet you still have to strategize and kind of reiterate, as the company ages.
Love it. I kind of want to start my own local Sin City Cupcakes. It just like sounds so tasty and so good. It's funny because I'm trying to bridge some gaps between all these separate industries you work in. And I feel like the real bridge from kind of my research was it seems like you're always partnering and building relationships where it almost doesn't matter whether it's cupcakes or, you know, Miss America or real estate. You seem to excel at pretty much anything you do, whether it's shipping things, like you excel at all these things, right? Talk about how like you build relationships and how that allows you to excel in industries that you possibly aren't trained in. I mean, you're a trained attorney, right? So these are things that you might not be trained in. How do relationships and partnering kind of play a part in all that?
It comes down to your sphere of influence and, the best way for me to build my sphere of influence was actually just getting out in the community. So my time with pageantry, for example, as Miss Las Vegas and Miss Nevada, I did nearly 500 community appearances, volunteering in schools, reading in hospitals, working with nonprofits, a lot of volunteer work, right? So I wasn't going to like networking meetups or like networking happy hours. Yeah. I was literally volunteering. I was like at a hospital, right? I was like volunteering. And I would meet people, right? I would meet people in the community. And then you just get a chance to start chatting with them and talking with them. And organically, right? It's, what else do you do? Or what are you into? Or whatever. And so you start sharing, you know, things about yourself. Social media has been a huge help because after you've met someone in person in the community, you stay connected on social media. And then that's really where they get to see, oh, she has a real estate brokerage. Hmm. My cousin's moving here. I should ask her about Summerlin or whatever, right? It becomes very organic in relation to people seeing what you do. So I think the whole idea of the networking happy hour is a little antiquated in the sense that you don't have to spill your guts to somebody the first time you meet them and tell them all the things that you do in hopes that there's a relationship that can be built there, right? Like inversely, build the relationship, right? And there's a common, some sort of commonality around you guys love volunteering at the Nevada SPCA because you love dogs or whatever, right? There's some sort of commonality there from a community standpoint. And then you stay connected on social or on LinkedIn. And then that's really where they get to see what you do for a living. Mm. And then you stay top of mind through that.
Yeah, that's perfect advice. I feel like so much we're defining ourselves by what we do and not who we are. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a funny American thing that it's like people define themselves by their occupation. But when you're in these events, it sounds like you get to connect with people on a more who you are level. Like, mm-hmm. what do you like to do? Who do you like to help? What is your vision? Let me ask you a little bit more about that. Like, what is your vision? Like, when, if you could help any charity, you don't have to name a specific charity, but what causes, like, what is your mission? Like, who are you trying to serve? Who are you trying to help? What kind of collective impact are you trying to make? I know that's like six questions, but who are these people? What lights you up?
Yeah. So I just, you know, I love, first of all, I love animals. I have two corgis. Mm. So anything, especially related, like I said, with Nevada SPCA, for example, there are state's largest no kill shelter. So I think that's really pleasant and important work. Another community that's really important to me is our military community. I come from a military family. My father was a Vietnam veteran. And, so, you know, the military community, our veterans, our military spouses, and so there's a lot of great nonprofits that are out there that are doing great work in that community. But it segues me right into the fund with the venture capital fund. And so that's for profit, right? We're for profit. And yet we're specifically very much involved with that community because I think entrepreneurship is the number one best way to empower anyone, any community, any individual. And so certainly within that community too.
Talk a little bit more about that. So you're for profit, and in some spheres, you just immediately hear for profit and start to like judge. I'm sure there is a calculated reason why it's a for profit fund. Why did you decide to be for profit, and what kind of impact does that allow you to create?
Yeah, so the fund is awesome. So it's called the Veteran Fund. And it is a for-profit venture capital fund. It invests at the pre-seed level into companies that are in technology, dual-use national security spaces. And part of our fund mandate is that there must be a veteran or military spouse in leadership at the C-suite level. So whether that's as a founder, a co-founder, president, CEO, CFO, anywhere in there. And so the fund, like I said, makes these investments, right, into these companies. In exchange for that, we do take equity. And we're alongside them on this journey. And so it becomes a win-win because these companies are raising. They're looking for those dollars. They're looking for those investors. They're also looking for the support. Mm. And then we also are able to build something pretty significant, not only in like returns on dollars, right? Returns on investments, but also within our fund. And I haven't heard of any other fund doing this. They may be out there, but I haven't heard of it. We do like a collective on the back end, and we have each of our portfolio companies also get a piece of each other. And what I love about that is that it's unlike the traditional VC model. The traditional VC model is let's invest in 20 companies and we're going to expect 18 of them to just totally fail. And two of them are going to hit big. And that's what's going to fund the fund. And with us, our due diligence is so tight and strong and selective. We want all of our 25 companies, we've done six so far, 25 is going to be within this first fund. We want all 25 to hit, right? And we want them all to root for each other. Like we're building a community here, right? Like we're sustaining a community. We're building one. So even though they're obviously separate companies with separate founders and separate operations and all the things, but one of the commonalities they share is that they have us as fund partners and as investors, and they're going to have a piece of each other. So when one of them hits, you know, 3 years from now and the other one hits 5 years from now, they all get to celebrate with each other and root for each other. And I just think that's really important.
That's huge. That's awesome. They're celebrating together. Talk about like a creative way to build that deal where there's not like, I always think of the pyramid, and in most organizations, funds, anything, there's some sort of a pyramid, but talk about the widest version of a pyramid you can get. Everybody is basically holding hands in it together, it sounds like.
Right, exactly. And so there's, like I said, it builds that kind of community culture on the back end where it says, look, we're all rooting for each other because we want this community, this, you know, the veteran community, the military community, whatever it is, we want this community to rise. We want this community to do better. So there are investors, individual investors who have invested in other portfolio companies because of the introductions made between the portfolio companies.
Gotcha.
Right? Like they really have built a very synergistic community, and that's what we want to help support.
Yeah, the synergy is perfect. How do I learn more about this kind of stuff?
For the fund, yeah, just go over to veteran.fund. Obviously we have our site there, and my partners in that, my fellow GPs are just incredible. And I'm very, very grateful to work alongside them. But frankly, this is my first foray into venture as an entrepreneur. I've bootstrapped and built myself and operated myself and just kept building, right? I never took on investors into my businesses, but I've been on the other end of the table as an angel investor, as a pitch judge. I've been on the other side. So with private equity, venture capital, with what we're doing at the fund, I'm so grateful to work alongside my partners in that because they have loads more experience than I do in the VC world. And I also viewed this as an opportunity for me to get to learn about a new industry.
Is that a big part of why you did it, for the learning? Like, why did you decide I'm going to dive headfirst into the VC world, even though like I've done these things kind of related to it? Like, why did you decide to make that leap? It's for just learning, or is there beyond that?
It was twofold. I wanted to be impactful, and I also wanted to learn. And I did due diligence on other funds before joining this one. And for example, one of the funds that I ended up passing on, and we got pretty far in the due diligence process. Like, I flew out to Park City and you know, met with some of the other GPs, and their list was really impressive. Like, their GP list, super impressive. Like, all these like Goldman Sachs guys and, you know, people who are very knowledgeable, very smart, have made loads of money doing exactly this. And I asked, I said, what else are we doing for these entrepreneurs besides writing them checks? And they were like no one had a good answer, which I thought was like very peculiar.
Yeah, like, I thought that writing checks was a good answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, okay, you know, and I didn't like that, right? Like, I didn't like that there wasn't a good answer behind that. And to me, that was reflective of the culture of that fund. Not good or bad, but that's the culture of that fund. So meaning any of our portfolio companies from, you know, had I joined that fund, any portfolio companies from there really just would have been more focused on like profit. Where's the profit? If you don't have profit, you need to go out and raise then. Like, just a different environment, right? So with the Veteran Fund, with these partners, it's awesome. Like, I love that, like, they provide great resources, in particular for the companies that we pass on, the companies that we decide not to invest in, right? They literally are like, here's all the other places you can look. Here's the other, you know, like, here's a scholarship to Founder Institute. Here's whatever. Like, they want to still be as helpful as possible and literally tell these folks, like, hey, you're too little too early for us. Here's what we recommend you do. Hit us up in a year. Like, keep us posted. We'd love to stay along for your progress, right? That is such a huge difference as a founder, right? As an entrepreneur, as a founder, I want to know, if I ever took on investors, right, that my investors are in it for the long haul, and that that they're willing to support me. Another thing with the fund that I really like and that I don't hear other funds doing, we're big on the mindfulness component because being an entrepreneur is hard. Being an entrepreneur is really hard, and it's really hard on you physically, mentally. And so we have thought leaders within the mental health space who are on our LP team, on our limited partner team, who are investors in the fund. It's Deepak Chopra, right? Like, we have these heavy hitters who are only focused on mindfulness and mental well-being. And I just think that's amazing for a fund who is focused on profits, right? We are for profit. But for a fund to also have that available as a resource and to have that be part of the component of building a successful venture alongside you.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to want you to elaborate, because there's two camps. I'm in the first camp, like, yes, mindfulness, it makes me a better person. But the second camp is, I'm trying to be really rich. I'm trying to be really successful. I'm type A, I'm driven, I'm busy. Why? Where the heck does mindfulness come into play? Elaborate a little bit more on the reason behind mindfulness and why it's such an important part of this, like a piece of this pie here.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, it's still new as far as a mindfulness practice for me. I just started meditating fairly consistently, maybe in the last year. And I'm like kind of embarrassed by that, because I have incredible mentors in my life and, you know, these amazing like eight-figure, nine-figure founders, right? And their commonality, they all have a mindfulness practice. Like, most of them daily, right? Most of them have a daily mindfulness practice. And I'm like, what am I missing here? Like, why am I not also giving that a chance? And what I've realized is that it is a way to just kind of slow your brain down, one. And two, I think it helped for me, it helps me better process all these decisions I make. I make a zillion decisions during the day, right? And my brain is always on. And so with mindfulness, I used to feel like it felt like a waste of time, because I was like sitting there, right? Like with my eyes closed, like trying to concentrate on my breathing. And like, I was annoyed because I was thinking about all the things that I had to do instead of sitting here for 10 minutes. And it's just, it's an exercise, right? Of like slowing your brain down, gaining some clarity. And then I think it helps with making better decisions when your fast brain is like just constantly moving.
Yeah. I've meditated stuff like that on and off for like 5-10 years, and I go on long hiatuses. And transparency, anybody listening, like, I will sit down to meditate, and 5 minutes in, I've just put together a long to-do list. Like, I can't get, they say the voice in your head's an asshole. Like, it's hard to get the voice in your head to shut up, but it gets easier, right? You get better as you put in the reps.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. It's totally like a brain exercise, right? Like a mental exercise, and it gets better the more that you do it, more consistently that you do it. And I just think it's incredibly important to have some sort of mindfulness practice, but also just even be aware of mental health in business, especially in coming from law too. Like, no one talks about feelings. No one wants to talk about feelings. I'm not comfortable. I'm still to this day, I'm not super comfortable talking about feelings. If someone asks me how I'm doing, I tell them what I'm working on.
Right.
I don't tell them how I'm feeling. And so even just that habit of, how are you feeling, right? Like, what are you feeling right now? And I'm like, gosh, I even have to like tap into like, what is that, and articulate that. It's still new for me, but yeah. I do think it is very important.
That's really interesting, because usually if someone asks me how I feel, I try to embody the feeling with a story or a thing I'm working on. But there's a lot of toxicity out there. I forget who said it or who coined it or why it's out there, but it's like, facts aren't feelings. And you come in from a background where quite literally,
facts are what's important, right? Yeah. Like, facts are the win or lose of the whole matter. So facts are the only thing that's important.
Tell me a little bit about this, though, because you can go as microscopic as you want. I don't know what parts of law you're most engaged in, but I see like courtroom trials, and there's a little bit of theater, and there's tonality, and there's persuasion and storytelling, and there's sure. It's not just facts. Like, even in a scenario like that, like, the facts go a long way, but if you have a compelling story, isn't it the stories that sell, the emotion that sells, like the connection you get to have with people? What's your experience with that? Because again, the law is the law, but is the law the law? I feel like there's a lot of nuance, you know?
So in a jury trial, yeah. You are trying to evoke emotion. In a jury trial, you're trying to evoke emotion because you have 12 people there. They're not necessarily your peers, right? They call it a jury of your peers. In general, they're not your peers, right?
Sure. I would never show up for a jury. I'm not a
That's
fan.
What I'm saying. Think about every single person who's gotten out of jury duty, right? It's because they have a job or because, you know what I mean? Like, so it's in general, not a jury of your peers.
Okay.
And it's 12 people who you just have to convince, right? So the goal is to draw out emotion in a jury trial. Now, if you're doing business litigation in front of a business court judge, if you're doing bankruptcy proceedings in front of a bankruptcy judge, there is no jury to convince. Right. And that judge has heard everything, right? The judge has heard it all. And so the judge, in them making their decision, they need to be able to defend their decision, which means they're looking at precedents and they're looking at what's been done before. And if for whatever reason, the decision they're going to make now is different than what's been done before, there has to be an extremely compelling argument that is evidentiary. So I think there's a lot of passion that's needed when you're delivering these types of arguments. But in general, facts versus feelings, right? If someone says, I felt this way, or this person made me feel this way, it's hard if that's to compel it as an evidentiary fact, right? Because it could be hearsay.
True.
And so coming from that world and even writing pleadings the way that you do, right? Writing these court documents, writing pleadings, it's all based on facts, right? You know, Lisa and Ben spoke at 11 a.m. on this date at 11:02. Like, it's just very factual. really.
Exciting.
Exciting. Yeah, exactly. Super dry.
Yeah.
And so I think the fact that mindfulness and, feelings and that kind of stuff is more at the forefront. I think even in the corporate world now too, I think even 10 years ago, that was not really the case, but now there is more room for that and more dialogue surrounding that. And so I just think it's wonderful that it's also entered into the entrepreneurial space because, again, as entrepreneurs, it's not, in general, it's not something that we really discuss of like how we're feeling, right? It's more just like what needs to get done and put your head down and get it done.
Yeah. It's a good friend of mine, Amberly Lago, she has the PACER method. And without going through all of it, the R in PACER is rest.
Mm.
Like, we forget about the whole concept that God rested on the seventh day.
Yeah,
and
sure.
As entrepreneurs, we're like, grind. Here's the playbook.
7 days a week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And let's be real. If there's a playbook that works and you have the ability to be creative and audible, you will be successful if you put in the reps. But if you put in too many reps, you're going to get injured. Like, you got to remember to rest. Don't know where that going to pivot all over the place here, because talking about law and facts and figures, we can't change that. Let's talk about some of the things we can change and how we can show up. I thought it was really interesting. I can't even remember exactly why I wrote this down, but I wrote down in my notes, bottle service, customer service.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what that means. Like, talk about something where you're in bottle service, something very emotional, very something customer service, and just how people like, I'm trying to remember, like, people like that just excel, right?
So what I realized with our real estate brokerage was that some of our best agents, some of the best recruits that we pulled of people who came from one industry, like hospitality, bottle service, and delved into real estate as a brand new agent with no background in that before, have the high likelihood of success. And like, why was that? Right. And it's because if you are a high end bottle service waitress in specifically in Las Vegas, first off, super competitive, right? This is not just like some job you can just like get. Like there's auditions and tryouts and cuts and they're super, super strict. And there's a level of discipline that's taken there, right? When they do their auditions, especially for like the pools, I want to say they do their auditions starting like February, which means like you're dieting during the holidays. You're working out because you have to be, you audition in a swimsuit. You audition in a bikini, in a two-piece. So you have to have some discipline, right? During the holidays. And then when you're working, like especially like pools, like the big party pools where these girls stand to make $400,000-$600,000 over the summer, like extremely competitive to get hired. Cause as you can imagine, everyone wants that job. Right. And this is not for the week. I mean, this is like, you're out there 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in 115 degree heat wearing wedges and a bikini in full hair and makeup. And you're running around like a crazy person. On top of dealing with every VIP drunk asshole with a credit card.
Right.
Right. Your level of tolerance, your level of patience, your level of just like grin and bear it and like get it done, it has to be very, very high. And some of these girls who have done that for years, they are just so conditioned to being resourceful and just getting shit done. That is a skill you cannot teach. It has to be forged through experience. And interestingly, that hospitality environment, that high-end, high-pressure bottle service environment sometimes ends up breeding these women who are just like strong. They're really strong and they're really resourceful and they don't back down. They're not going to take no for an answer. They're going to figure it out.
You literally answered my question on like if you could teach it or not. So you can teach it. You're forged it. You basically gain this skill. Let's say, and it doesn't have to be bottle service, but I'm looking to be more resilient. I'm looking to be more strong. I'm looking to basically hone my mindset, just be like just more resilient. Like that's the word that's coming to mind. Is there anything that me or the listener can do to start forging this resilience and be stronger long-term? What's coming to mind for you?
I think do the hard stuff. Like for example, I don't like working out. I never had to work out on all my 20s, I guess just because of genetics and like a champagne diet. But now in my 30s, I have to work out. And I work out like twice a week, like ish, if I can get it in. And I don't like it. I don't like it. It's not my thing. I force myself to do it. And when I do it first thing in the morning as like a like early morning thing. And I also don't take any like coffee or pre-workout or anything to get me like jazzed up, like in the mood for it. I like fight my way through it through the entire hour. And for me, it's like a mental grit exercise, right? Like if I can force myself to do this, anything else that comes during the day, like I can obviously do it.
Do you think that's why you're so successful?
I mean, everyone's going to have their own version of what's hard for them. You know, in contrast, there are people who love the gym because they get the endorphins and they feel good and whatever they say. Like, I don't know. I don't get the endorphins. I don't know where they are. Like, I'm tired after I'm done. You know what I mean? I'm like tired and a little grumpy after I'm done, but I also feel accomplished. Right. And I, like I said, I just drink some water. I don't have coffee or a pre-workout or any of that stuff to get like amped up for it. I literally am just like, you know, in there, like kind of grumpy, like, you know, mentally telling myself, like, just do this, like, get it over with, do it, get it done.
Do you think that is a learned behavior is that the kind of thing that someone's just born with?
I think it can be learned. I think everyone has it inside of them. It's a question of like, how often do you flex it? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think growing up in, you know, an Asian household, I had a Korean tiger mom. So that early lesson of like, I know you don't like piano practice, but you still have to do it anyway. So just go do it now. get it done. I don't want to hear you complain about it. Like that mentality from a young age, I think served me well because it forced me to just flex, right? It forced me to have to just flex and do it.
I love that line. How often do you flex it? Because like we have the, this is obviously symbolism, but we have the muscles.
We do.
Why aren't we working them out? Why aren't we flexing them? You talked about mindset.
It's easier not to. Grit. You don't want to. You know what I mean? It's easier not to. It's easier for me not to work out. It's so much easier. Do I like the results? Not really, but like, you know what I mean? I'm like, just it's easier if I don't.
Let's add context because it's definitely easier for me not to have this conversation. So I have conversations like this because I love to learn. Mm-hmm. I want to level up. It's easier just to go watch Netflix.
But 100%.
What happens in the long term? What's the long-term benefit of doing these reps? Well, what's your opinion on that? Because I feel like it's easy to go eat the cheeseburger, triple cheeseburger, but then 10 years down the road, you could be paying for surgery.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Like it's the long-term effects, I think they make you a better person, right? They're going to make you a better person in like every aspect of your life, right? You're going to be a better daughter or a better son. You're going to be a better partner. You're going to be a better business partner. You're going to be a better leader. Like I think it reflects in all of it. Because there's that saying, it's like how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Right.
And I think if we aren't willing to personally push ourselves or challenge ourselves, then you definitely won't want to be around it when someone else externally challenges or pushes you, right? Or if you have a disagreement with someone or a significant other, right? That's uncomfortable, right? And so the first thing you want to do is not be in that or not be around it or shy away from it or appease or something. But if you're used to placing yourself in uncomfortable situations at your own doing, you're going to have the grit. You're going to have the mental stability to deal with it when it comes from an external place too.
Right. Developing that grit for the long term. I want to talk about your long-term vision. I'm going to make myself uncomfortable. So side note, when I was in elementary school, I actually had to go through a lot of speech therapy because I couldn't say R's. So I'm going to continue to try to practice real rich women. Real rich women. So you're already a real rich woman, you're wealthy, you're kicking butt. Do you need any more? Like, what is the long-term vision? What is in Lisa's forecast in her future?
Yeah. So I don't have like a dollar amount. I used to have like dollar amount, right? That you work towards. You're like, I want to make my first $1 million. Right. And then it grows from there. And then you're like, okay, well, what is it? What is it that I'm actually wanting to work towards and achieve? And for me, it's impact and then also flexibility. Mm. I have everything in my life designed in the way that like I love what I do. So working 5-6 days a week, I love that. I love it because I get to do everything, like every project that I touch and everything I'm involved in is because I want to be, not because I have to be, not because I'm forced to be. I genuinely really enjoy it. And I think impact, like we do have a responsibility to, I think, like help others and be impactful to you know, whatever extent we can be. And I think the more resources that you have and the more blessings that you have, like you should be paying that forward because there were definitely a lot of great people in my life, great mentors, you know, people who made time for me, who took my phone call, picked up the phone when I called, right? Took me under their wing. And I just think it's so important to pay that stuff forward.
Paying it forward. I appreciate this. You hear something like real witch. I can't say it. Real rich women. I'm just like doubling like that. You're not a witch. You're incredible. I apologize. And it's like, oh, it's this person's all in it for themselves, but it's beyond that. Like the wealth gives you the opportunity to create more impact. It sounds like you're not just like here to make money for money's sake. It's what you can do with that power and that impact that really kind of moves the needle on what we're trying to do here.
And what I love about Real Rich Women, we're building this
That's
community.
That's how it's supposed to be said.
We're building this community. Don't even worry. We're building this community of women who are seeking financial independence.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how important that is. Like, for everybody, everyone should be financially independent. But I think, especially coming from, a woman's perspective, if you don't have financial security, you are seeking it then, right? And sometimes you find it in a significant other. And the crazy part about that is that you lose yourself. I've seen it happen with girlfriends. Like, you lose yourself. You lose a part of your identity because you now have to conform to the preferences of that person because you're exchanging that for the security. And that's not a good or bad thing. It's not a judgy, like, whatever. Like, if that's part of your MO and you're totally okay with that, that's wonderful for you. But if you feel like you're compromising because of that, if you feel like you're literally changing who you are to adapt and conform to the preferences of this other person simply because you need financial security, like, that is not a good enough reason. Not in this day and age, not in the fact that we live in the United States of America, where as a woman, you can go open a business, you can own property, you can go get a job, right? There are other places in the world that that's not possible for young women. So we have that ability here, so you should take advantage of it.
Mm. I know men fall into this as well, but speak directly to the women and really the men, but just anybody who's like, ugh, I'm in that position and I don't know what I should do. And I feel like I kind of chose the wrong path and I feel like I'm possibly losing myself. What kind of advice or wisdom would you give that person?
One, it's never too late. Like, it's not that, it's not a sunk cost argument of like, well, I've spent all this time doing this, so I should just stay in it.
Since I spent the time, I need
exactly,
to commit
right,
to it.
Right. Okay. No. Like, that's not for this, you know? Right. And if it's on your heart that this isn't for you and that you don't feel like your authentic self in what you're in, then you have to make a change, but no one else can do it for you. Even if you have, externally, even if you have friends or family who are like, hey, like, you should be doing something else, or you should, whatever, like, it has to come from you. The change has to want to come from you, and you have to do the work that it's going to take. But it's just that first step, right? Whether it's going out and getting a job, or if it's investing into personal development and reading about real estate investing or whatever it is, and sort of, sector that intrigues you. Like, there's so many resources out there right now, especially with the internet, right? Between Instagram and TikTok and YouTube, like, you can learn about anything at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. So do that then.
Do it. In a moment, we're going to go rapid fire. Before we do, tell us again, like, I don't even know if I asked you, like, how can I support you? Where online, like, how can I become your cheerleader, your friend? How do I support Lisa?
Yeah, I'm on social, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Lisa Song Sutton. And my website is lisasongsutton.com.
It's easy peasy. It's in the show notes. I do recommend people. So rapid fire is super fun. Just easy questions, no mind boggling stuff. So while we talk here, just go to the show notes and pop it open right now and follow her and, like, reach out, send an email, whatever you want to do, wherever you're most comfortable. Do that right now. So rapid fire, easy or either or, fill in the blank questions. You can pass. Points don't matter. coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Who is one of your superheroes? Alive or fiction?
My mom.
Your mom? Why?
She is just like, I really feel like she's taught me everything that's, like, important in my life. And she shows up for me in ways that, like, no one else does. And I'm constantly having to work on myself because, they say, like, you're like the meanest or like the grossest to, like, the people closest to you.
Right.
And, like, my patience level is so high and tolerant with, like, all these other people. And, like, I'm the shortest with my mom. right? I'll be the first to be like, Mom, I have to get on the phone. I have another call coming in or whatever, you know? And it's literally like a personal development exercise for me to keep reminding myself, like, I need to show up so much better for her. And I do that to her because I know she's always going to be there for me. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
She's my number one supporter. She's my number one, like, everything. And like, I am like the shortest to her, or like, I'll carve out the least amount of time for her. I'll put her on the back end or whatever it is.
The awareness is key. Thank you for sharing that. I said these are easier short answers. I appreciate you elaborating. No, you're perfect. Let's do another longer one because I love this energy. You've accomplished so much. Pinpoint one of those, if not the most, but one of the proudest moments of your life and why you're so just ecstatic about accomplishing some specific thing.
I think one of the greatest joys I've received is, especially within our real estate brokerage, is seeing the growth of not only our agents, but also them having the ability to become real estate investors. So you have, you know, real estate advisors, right? Agents running around all over the country, right? And I always tell them, I'm like, you will get rich helping other people buy and sell real estate. You will get wealthy owning real estate. And then again, especially for like women, because most of our agents, majority of our agents are women. And like, it just creates another bucket of income for them. And it changes their mindset around like, oh my gosh, like now I'm also a real estate investor. Like, it literally opens up a whole other world for them from an industry that they're very familiar with, and that they've worked in, but it's literally this whole other layer now. And it totally provides them a level of financial independence. And I just think that's so awesome.
Lisa, you're incredible. I said I'd get you out of the door in time. I want to keep you another like 2 hours. I promise I won't. So we're going to follow up with you. You said LisaSongSudden.com.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Lisa Song Sudden on Instagram. And just to get the take off the training wheels here, Real Rich Women on Instagram as well. I said it right the final time. So we're getting better.
Yes, perfect.
I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a total pleasure. I don't even know what to say.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.
Lisa Song Sutton, and I'm an entrepreneur real estate investor in Las Vegas, Nevada. I loved being on the show. I love that we're able to deep dive into, you know, some really significant, impactful things, and then also have like fun with the rapid fire. And I like that it's like quick and easy.